Nick DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Tribune Tower. Here till 2 o'clock tonight for a full show. Tomorrow, we will be on late following Game 5, Hawks versus Bruins, and we'll be on at 11 o'clock. We'll be on from 11 to 2 tomorrow night. And as we mentioned, George Karzis is going to join us. There's a really great event happening this Tuesday at Kale Street Inn that we'll tell you all about. It involves great music and great food, as many things do at the Gale Street Inn. And it also helps a really great cause. It's a charity night, and it's going to be great. So we'll tell you how you can join everybody for the fun at Gale Street on Tuesday. Also, we are going to have my cast from Black and Blue on tomorrow night. If you're interested, please come and see Black and Blue. Spread the word. Tell your friends. It's the story of two brothers. One is a Cubs fan. One is a Sox fan. It's about their rivalry, the team rivalry. It all takes place in their dad's bar in Chicago over the course of 10 years as they bet on which team will have more wins by that 10-year time period. I love the show. It's hilarious. I'm really proud of it. I co-wrote it with Anthony Turnis, and I directed it. And I got a great cast, 14 of the funniest and most talented actors you'll see, and many of which will be in the studio tomorrow night after 11 o'clock to talk about life in the Storefront Theater, to talk about their work, to talk about the show. But I would really love you to come and see Black and Blue. Spread the word. I'm real proud of it. It's a true salute to brotherly love and taverns and Chicago in general. This is a true, true Chicago show. And I couldn't be more proud of it. It's terrific. You don't have to be a hardcore baseball fan to like it. And if you're a Cubs fan or a Sox fan, come wearing your colors. Make sure you sport your colors. I can't tell you how many times in the course of the first run of this show in 2011 and now the past couple of weeks that we've been running, or I should say one weekend and two nights, where people are showing up sporting their Sox stuff or their Cubs stuff. And it's just a lot of fun. So come and check out the show. It's at the Raven Theater, which is 6157 North Clark in Chicago. There's plenty of parking. You can grab a drink at Fritzy's across the street afterwards. But yeah, I'm real proud of it, and I hope you can come and see it. Black and Blue for its second run. We had a very, very successful run back in 2011, and we're very excited to have it back at the Raven Theater. So you can check out RavenTheater.com for your tickets. RavenTheater.com is the website that you can call and get your tickets to Black and Blue. And also the phone number is 773-338-2177. That's 773-338-2177. You can call the Raven Theater for further information and to get your tickets now. We run through July 28th, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3:30. Get your tickets now, RavenTheater.com. Come on out and see Black and Blue. Let's pack the place and have some fun. All right. It is Friday night. It is midnight, and that means it's time to review the movies. If you want to jump in with your questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. We do that every Friday night right here on WGN after midnight. If you want to jump in here with your comments or questions about movies, 312-981-7200. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every week, and we welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
How are you? We just lost Colin.
Okay.
Colin, call back. Colin, call back. All right. We had Colin there for a second, and we lost him, so he'll call back. How you doing, Eric?
Doing okay.
All right.
Doing okay.
Yeah. Are you going to come back and see Black and Blue again?
I might. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to revisit that play, actually.
All right. Yeah. Come and see it. It's we run through July 28th, so there's plenty of time.
Okay.
And we're waiting for Colin to call back. Colin, give us a call. I don't know what happened. I hit the buttons the way I'm supposed to hit the button, and the next thing I know, he's gone. Maybe that's probably him right here. Is that Colin? I hope it's Colin. Oh, it is. Okay, let's say hi to Colin. Colin!
Hello there.
All right, you're there. All right, good. We're all here. Okay. All right. Interesting week here.
Mm-hmm.
The one movie that I wanted to see the most this weekend, I didn't have time to see. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. It's the Sofia Coppola film. That's the one movie that I really, really did want to see that I didn't get a chance to see. But I did see Monsters U, World War Z, and Much Ado About Nothing. So, and I know that, Colin, you saw Much Ado About Nothing as well?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And you guys both saw the Sofia Coppola film, right? The Bling Ring.
Yep. Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. Let's start where we always start, which is on demand. As you know, there are now so many different ways that you can watch new movies, streaming them. You can watch them on your computer. You can watch them on your TV. And one of the options is on demand, where you can see brand new movies, some of which aren't even in the theaters yet, on your television. All you got to do is get your remote, pick your movie, and pay like $6, $7, and you get to see a brand new movie that hasn't hit theaters or just was in the theaters on your on-demand. And we always go through the list of on-demand movies that are available to you each Friday night. So let's start with on-demand. Eric?
Yes.
Alien Uprising.
Title pretty much says it all, I would think.
Yeah.
But I'll give you the plot description here. Friends get together for a night out in a bar. Sounds riveting already.
Yeah.
Life is wonderful as a couple share their proposal moment. When suddenly strange things start to happen. Loss of power throughout the city. No phones, no lights. Just darkness as the friends try to cope. Then an invasion from UFOs. Big ones. The sky is darkened by the ships of the alien invaders. The takeover of planet Earth has begun as our five friends struggle to survive. Amid the chaos and calamity, will love survive the terror?
Yeah.
And stars Bianca Brie, Sean Brosnan, Simon Phillips, Maya Grant, and Jean-Claude Van Damme as George.
Jean-Claude Van Damme as George.
George, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that sounds a lot like that The Darkest Hour movie. Mm. Remember that crap?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, that's what it sounds like. I haven't seen a preview or anything.
I haven't seen a preview for this either, but I mean, I for some reason, I don't know why I would think a movie that there has already been about 30 movies called Alien Uprising. Doesn't it seem like...
half of them star Bruce Campbell.
Right. And it just seems like a title that's probably been used a million times. But but Van Damme, I hope maybe he'll cause a little Van Damme.
That'd be nice. I mean, he's got the "and" on the poster, so it seems like he might have that Steven Seagal executive decision role.
Yeah.
You know, he might be not long for the uprising.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. All right. So that's Alien Uprising. If you want to see a Van Damme causing some Van Damme against some aliens, on demand. All right. Next on demand, Apartment 1303.
1303, yes. And I don't think you can get it on demand in a certain format, but apparently in some theaters it's going to be released in 3D.
You know what? I just went to the page, and it's called Apartment 1303 3D.
That's a terrible title.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But anyway.
What the hell was the full... What was the name of that John Cusack movie?
1408.
1408, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was getting all...
So this one's down, you know, one floor lower.
Right. I actually liked 1408.
That's a good movie.
I thought 1408 was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what do we got here? What do we know about this? I'm looking at the cast.
Well, it's a horror film. Following a family dispute, Janet moves out of the home she shares with her older sister, Lana, and their single mother, Maddie.
Yeah.
And they're played by Misha Barton and Rebecca De Mornay.
Where the hell has Rebecca De Mornay been?
I don't know. Wow. She was in that. Did you see that remake of Mother's Day?
Yes, I
did. You saw it, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's where she's been.
Uh-huh.
That was a no good.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Okay, so the younger sister moves into apartment 1303 in the 13th floor of a downtown Detroit apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
A 9-year-old neighbor, Emily, explains to Janet that a previous occupant of her new apartment killed herself. Strange things begin to occur in the apartment, and then when Janet appears bruised at work, she rebuffs concerns that her boyfriend Mark is abusing her and blames the marks on sleepwalking.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So it's a ghost thing, then.
It's a ghost thing.
Okay, so it's a haunted apartment.
Yeah.
In Detroit.
Evil apartment movie.
In Detroit, or it could just be a regular apartment in
Detroit. Detroit, yeah.
And Rebecca De Mornay is in it. And John Deal is in it.
Yes.
They should have called him the Dork. Is in it.
We call him the Cruiser.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Apartment 1303. I don't know if it's going to. It does open in theaters. According to this, it opens in theaters on July 25th.
Yes.
So if you're really waiting to see the 3D effects, then maybe you should not order it on demand right now. But it is available on demand. Apartment 1303, a ghost story featuring Rebecca De Mornay and Misha Barton. Where should I know her from? I mean, I know she's...
The O.C.?
All right.
Did you watch The O.C.? Yeah.
I stopped watching. I watched it for a few...
Mm-hmm.
It should be in my wheelhouse, but I guess didn't really like it very much. What else?
Yeah.
Was she in something else?
I mean, that's what she's sort of famous for.
Yeah.
She's done a lot of movies, but okay. That's the thing she's sort of known for.
Okay, Misha Barton. There you go. Horror movie. Nick DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN Midnight. Movie reviews continue. Eric and Colin from eFilmCritic.com. We always try to keep you abreast of what's going on the world of on-demand, since it's a good option. So Eric and Colin and I are taking care of that right now. There's Colin, and there's Eric.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Let's continue with the movies that are available on-demand. So far, we've talked about Alien Uprising and Apartment 1303. Now, here is Compulsion.
Okay. Compulsion stars Heather Graham and Carrie Ann Moss as lesbian lovers.
All right, I'm in.
Do I need to go on? we can just leave it with that, right? Yep. Okay. Next. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Let's just call that a tease and move on.
Heather Graham and Carrie Ann Moss as lesbian lovers.
Yeah. Apparently it's one of those psychosexual thrillers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's
yeah.
Okay. Well, I know what I'm watching when I get home.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Compulsion. That's all you need. That's a selling point right there.
That's right.
All right. Haunting. Tell us about The Haunting of Helena.
The Haunting of Helena. A single mother moves into a new house with her daughter.
What the hell's going on here?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Soon after the young girl has her first baby tooth fall off, she begins to recount that she is having nocturnal visits by a tooth fairy. It seems the house has a sinister history.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
All okay. right. So the Tooth Fairy. Didn't we have a Tooth Fairy movie?
That was called Darkness Falls.
Oh, my God. What a horrible movie that was.
Yes.
Man, oh, man.
From the director of Battle Los Angeles.
Has there ever been a good Tooth Fairy movie?
Has there ever been a good Tooth Fairy movie? I don't know. The one with The Rock was kind of funny.
Really?
Yeah, really?
It was all right. I laughed. It's for kids.
All right. If you say so. I didn't see it. It looked awful. So, all right.
Now what would you say? Darkness Falls from the director of what?
Battle Los Angeles.
Oh, that's right. He did do that movie, didn't he?
He did that first. And in the Texas Chainsaw remake prequel.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the Battle Los Angeles movie. I'm the only person in the world that liked it.
Yeah. Colin loves that movie.
Yeah, Colin. I know it's one of your favorites, Colin.
Yeah.
I will say this, the poster art's cool.
For Haunting Helena?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poster art's pretty cool.
White, big mouth, blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The original title was Fairy Tale.
Sure.
And now it's called Haunting of Helena, and it's about an evil tooth fairy.
Yes. Apparently.
All right.
Something in the house is sinister.
Something in the house is sinister. Perhaps it's the tooth fairy. All right.
Yeah.
Haunting of Helena. Okay. The Hot Flashes. What do we got there?
Okay, The Hot Flashes is the latest film from director Susan Seidelman.
Whoa! There's a name from the past,
huh?
Holy cow.
Yeah. So here you go. Now, let me give you the plot description first.
All right, now you've seen this one, right?
Yeah, okay. I have.
All right.
An unlikely basketball team of unappreciated middle-aged Texas women, all former high school champs, challenged the current arrogant high school girls' state champs to a series of games to raise money for breast cancer prevention.
Hmm.
Sparks fly as these marginalized women go to comic extremes to prove themselves on and off the court and become a national media sensation.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the Hot Flashes, the basketball team in question, consists of Brooke Shields, Daryl Hannah, Virginia Madsen, Wanda Sykes, and Cameron Manheim.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This film is horrible.
Is it really?
Oh, it is. I've never seen, you know, more least convincing basketball sequences ever. I mean, the WNBA is, you know, more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But this, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just kind of made me sad.
Okay.
You know, because I kept watching Virginia Madsen out there, and she's kind of got, like, she's, like, the spunky character with the personality.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I'd rather see her doing something better than this.
Yeah.
You know, and Wanda Sykes is funny. And this movie also has Eric Roberts.
Yeah, what does he play?
He plays Brooke Shields' philandering mailman husband who likes basketball.
When I think philandering mailman, I think Eric Roberts.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Of course
all right.
you do.
You know, this thing just looks like a disaster.
Yeah, it's...
It is coming out in theaters July 12th, if you're interested.
Yeah.
But well, it's available on...
If you've been waiting for those, you know, for basketball and menopause to come together in a film, here it is.
There you go. All right, that's The Hot Flash, is available on On-Demand right now. We got a couple more On-Demand. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that the town that they are in, that they're having all the basketball stuff in,
mm-hmm.
Burning Bush. Name of the town.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right, we're done talking about this movie.
Okay.
talk
about Compulsion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's talk about Compulsion, the one I'll be watching later on.
Yes.
All right. Okay, we got a few more. Hang on, guys. We got a few more on-demand titles and then talking about the big theatrical releases, helping you out. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews, 312-981-7200. News is next. Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Tribune Tower, and it's Midnight Movie Review time. Colin and Eric join me from eFilmCritic.com. Right now we're covering all the on-demand movies that you can watch from the comfort of your own home. We welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello. Hello.
And Eric. All right, Eric.
Yes.
All right, next on the list of the on-demand films,
mm-hmm.
How to Make Money Selling Drugs.
Yes.
Is the name of this movie.
Yeah, and it's a documentary, and it sounds like it might be a very cheeky documentary with a title like that. But as the film begins, it is pretty much a blueprint, a guide to how you know people in certain demographics and cultures can easily fall into the drug trade. And the movie sets itself up like a go-to. Thing. It's basically, get yourself a territory, get yourself some product, get yourself some clients, all this kind of stuff. And people like 50 Cent are talking. They have actually real life drug dealers that are telling their stories and how they got involved with this and the violence and the stuff that they go to. But then the film begins to sort of evolve and begins to sort of take a turn into the idea of the drug war. And how these drug dealers are able to either get away with it for as long as they possibly can, or are snatched up because of the color of their skin. Quickly, a lot of people probably can compare this to the documentary from last year called "The House I Live In,"
mm-hmm.
Andrew Jarecki film.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think this film is better because this film is a much more complete picture about the drug war. "The House I Live In" was good and very specific. But this film touches upon a little bit of that, but expands it into lawyers and bankers and politicians and the history of the drug war and all the things that have gone wrong with it. And it's really this incredible spectrum from how you can get involved with this stuff to sort of the fence that not all drugs are. Horrible for people, and they're that we're targeting the wrong things. But then also reminding that drugs, can do a lot of harm. So this film really covers all the bases, and I really applaud the director Matthew Cook, who was the editor and producer of a documentary a few years ago called "Deliver Us from Evil."
Great film.
Exactly. He's the director on this one, and he does a fabulous job. I'd say other than Stories We Tell this year, this is probably my favorite documentary of the year.
And I'm looking at some of the people who are interviewed or are a part of it. You got Woody Harrelson, Susan Sarandon, Eminem,
mm-hmm.
David Simon.
Yes.
The creator of The Wire.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff about The Wire.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, so you got that going for it. Woody Harrelson credited as a freedom enthusiast in the film. So there you go.
I love Woody Harrelson, man.
Yeah, how can you not? But yeah, no, I highly recommend people checking this one out on demand. It's really kind of an eye opener.
Okay, How to Make Money Selling Drugs, a terrific documentary that Eric highly recommends. You can get it on demand. All right, what do we know about Liars All, except for the fact that my future ex-wife is in it?
Yes, Sarah Paxton.
Yes,
you're referring to. Yes. well, this is we know that it takes place in London on New Year's Eve, where a provocative game spins out of control and ends in murder. The true killer, elusive amidst conflicting testimony and hidden motives.
Uh-huh.
And which reminds me, I watched Mindhunters a few weeks ago.
Why?
I don't know. It was on, and I didn't change the channel.
Okay, I was going to say.
I wanted to be reminded of how stupid that movie was.
I love that movie.
And why Nick liked it. That's. Why did Nick like this again? Oh, yeah, Rennie Harlan directed it.
I love that movie.
Yeah, so that's what this... I don't know, that's the first thing that I thought of. Okay, so you got game, murder, and a mystery.
Yeah.
And Sarah Paxton. Well, I'd look at that.
I would, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything she's in, I'll watch.
Sure.
She's awesome. It opens... Boy, this thing is on demand early.
Yes.
Because this doesn't open in the theaters until August.
Yes.
So you get to see this one way early. It opens up in theaters in August. But Liars All, a thriller featuring the very, very adorable and very talented Sarah Paxton, available on demand. All right, now this last one, obviously, you know, I remember you saw it at a film festival. I can't remember which one.
Sundance? At Chicago, actually.
Oh, Chicago. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a remake of a classic. Well, I hesitate to use
infamous classic.
Infamous, yes.
Yeah.
An infamous film from 1980 called Maniac. Which there are fans of. There are there are Manny Tamayo being one of them. There are people who absolutely love Maniac, the original film directed by William Lustig, written and starring Joe Spinell, and of course the lovely Carolyn Monroe.
Gene Siskel, not a fan.
No.
He walked out after a half hour.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I've seen it a few times, and it's brutal, it's insane, and I couldn't think of anybody ever wanting to remake it, and but from what I've heard from you and from the trailer and from what I've read, I think they've taken kind of an interesting spin on the material here.
They have,
yeah.
And I have to confess, I've actually never seen the 1980 version.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay, good. So when I saw this version, I was curious if that was how they did it in 1980, and apparently it wasn't. But Elijah Wood takes the role of the killer, the mannequin store owner whose mother was a prostitute. Now you know, roams the streets, you know, looking for women and whatnot. Brings them back to the mannequin store, and you know, tends to scalp them a little bit.
Yeah, that is the same plot from the original.
There you go.
Much, yeah.
The big difference between the two movies is that the film is done entirely through the POV of the killer. So it'll take the beginning of Halloween, take the old Humphrey Bogart film that did the POV thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Zemeckis did that for Tales from the Crypt, too. But yeah, no, so the entire movie is, I mean, other than, you know, unless you see Elijah Wood looking in a mirror or something, it's all through his eyes. So you hear his voice. I think it's actually a really good performance by Elijah Wood. He's very creepy, sometimes sympathetic even. The film is violent and brutal and there's lots of nudity. I was definitely into it. It was directed by Frank Calhoun. Who directed P2, not a very good movie.
No, a terrible movie.
But it was co-scripted by your boy, Alexander Aja.
I know. I love him.
So I think you want to check this out next.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check this one out.
Yeah.
No question about
right
it.
Right after Compulsion.
Yeah. Well, it's a little maniac there. So Elijah Wood and in a thriller, and it's unrated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they've not even gone for the rating on this one.
Yeah, it's definitely quite violent.
All right, very violent, told from the point of view of a maniac killer, featuring an interesting performance by Elijah Wood. Eric liked it. It is now available on demand. If at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday you would like to you would like to watch something alone in your apartment, perhaps this is the one to watch.
Yes.
So there you go. All right, you guys, hang on.
Okay.
And then we got to get to the theatrical releases this week. Big ones that came out this week, and we'll talk about all of them and review them all. And once again, these all the movies that we've been reviewing here, absolutely available on different on-demand services throughout the country. I have the Comcast service, which is really good, and every week, whichever ones we review end up on that on-demand. So. Nick DiCilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews continue on with Eric and Colin from eFilmCritic.com, and we welcome Colin to the show. Hello, Colin.
Hello.
And Eric. All right, guys. Colin, why don't you tell us about Monsters University?
All right. Well, this is the prequel to the 2001 Monsters, Inc. from Pixar. And this has Mike and Scully, voiced by, you know, Billy Crystal and John Goodman, younger and college age, attending Monsters University, where they both major in scaring people. And Mike has his nose in the books, and Scully is, you know, just naturally scary but doesn't really apply himself. And they start out not liking each other. So, you know, kind of a buddy movie style. But they end up in the same dorm, populated by the school's, you know, biggest misfits. But of course, everybody there has their own unique talent, and so they end up competing in this tournament that is meant to bring out the best in all the scarers and all the monsters, and it's all lorded over by the dean. Dean Hardscrabble, who is this kind of centipede-like creature who has it in for Mike and Scully. It's voiced by Helen Mirren. So that's the basic plot. It's basically, you know, this tournament takes up a big part of the plot. Now, I like Monsters, Inc. very much. I wouldn't put it in my top five of Pixar movies. I think it has a lot of a lot of heart and a lot of charm and a lot of originality and beautiful animation, you know, everything that makes a great Pixar movie. I just think it kind of lags in the middle, but I like it. Monsters University just lags from the get-go. For anyone listening to the plot description, if I didn't tell you it was about, if I didn't tell you it was an animated movie about monsters, you'd think I was just talking about your average college comedy that you've seen 100 times before. And that's what this is. It's profoundly average. And for Pixar, that is unacceptable. There isn't a big laugh to be had in this movie. There's no imagination put into it, no emotion, no effort. And it is just another sign of Pixar just kind of phoning it in every year now, which they have been for, well, it's the third year in a row. The last good movie they did was Toy Story 3. So this is yet another monumental disappointment from the studio. And while I still think Cars 2 is their worst film, you could almost make a case for this one being either just as bad or worse because the drop off from quality from the original is greater. The original Cars wasn't that great to begin with. And at least Cars 2 had a central ambition of what it wanted to be. It wanted to be a spy movie, an old-fashioned spy movie, which is a cool idea, but just not well executed because, well, basically it's a Larry the Cable Guy movie. But this has not even a trace of that kind of ambition to it. It is really just, like I said, it's a phoned-in movie through and through and a big disappointment.
Yeah, Eric.
Colin's absolutely right. I mean, I said last week that Man of Steel might have been the biggest disappointment of the year for me. No, this absolutely trumps it. I happen to love Monsters Incorporated. I watched it again over the weekend. There's so much to like about that movie, and there's a real interesting irony that the end of the movie, basically, you know, back in 2001, came to where the monsters came to the conclusion that they could be more successful by not scaring children by making them laugh. And the key to that is the word children, because it seems that Pixar's creative direction is basically to just make movies for people under the age of 12, because this is a film that is not for adults. I've heard people try to muster up some enthusiasm for this thing, saying it's, you know, Animal House for kids, Revenge of the Nerds for kids. No, this is basically The Internship for kids. The plot description that Colin gave, you could almost, you know, put it right over the plot line for The Internship. And there's so much in common, it almost made me sick watching it. This is the first Pixar film that absolutely bored me. I mean, it really kind of bored me to tears. I mean, Cars 2 was kind of laughless and joyless, but like Colin said, at least you could sense they were trying for something there. I don't know what they were trying for here. The central message of the film, I think, is an interesting one, but it's not really explored. It just kind of lies there on the screen, and with given absolutely no depth to it whatsoever. There's precisely one time where I really kind of laughed out loud during the movie, and if you see the commercial with a snail in it, you'll know what I was laughing at. But that's it. I mean, Pixar, I don't know what's going on over there. You know, I mean, maybe someone else needs to be in charge. You know, the fact that they've got, you know, a whole bunch of more prequels and sequels planned worries the hell out of me. So Monster University, the biggest disappointment of the year for me.
Yeah, I was massively disappointed as well. I echo everything you guys said. This is not good. When did Disney actually buy Pixar?
2006.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Notice anything? I mean,
well, that
no,
was,
I mean, what
was
you got? Wally,
2006, right?
What was Wally was 2008.
2008.
And Up was 2009.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Toy Story 3 was 2010.
Right. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I was trying to trace it to the fact that Disney bought them, but I guess that's not it because
yeah,
not quite.
Because you know, but no, this is everything that you guys said. It was depressing to watch this movie because I really like the first one a lot. I think the first one is really funny. Really about something and original, and I really cared about the characters. I liked the characters, and it was clever. None of that is here, and you're right. I mean, this is as cookie cutter a plot as you can possibly get. Taking some characters that were established in the earlier film and just turning them into, you know, like one dimensional. You could have plugged any character into this film. Any character it was like watching Old School, you know, and. Mm-hmm. It was a massive disappointment. I don't know. Has anybody heard reactions from parents or kids or anything about this? I know it only came out today, but I mean, I'm wondering if, you know, huge fans like the three of us, huge, huge fans of the great Pixar stuff, have reached a point where it's like, man, what's going on over there?
There are critics that are really liking this movie. They're
yeah,
really,
yeah. Yeah, there's on RogerEbert.com, you know, he's got a bunch of, you know, writers writing on his website right now, and right on the front page is a 4-star review of this thing.
Wow.
I just can't believe.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I just don't see
and
it.
And 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. And you read a lot of the quotes, a lot of the positive quotes on Rotten Tomatoes, and they're all just like, it's not great, but it's Pixar, so, you know, it's better than Epic. Mm. You know, it's like, okay, that's not good enough.
Right.
You know, we can demand better from them.
Absolutely.
It's not unreasonable. We've
no.
gotten 10 years' worth of great movies from them.
Yep.
It's not unreasonable to demand better.
Right. But. Well, massive disappointment for all three of us as big fans of Pixar. If you like the original Monsters, Inc., which is a terrific movie, I think you're going to be massively disappointed with this movie. One of the biggest disappointments of the year, no question about it. Monsters University. It pains me to do that, to give bad reviews to Pixar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. All right, you guys, hang on. Eric and Colin and I are all disappointed by Monsters University. If you want to jump in with your comments, it's 312-981-7200. News is next.